of the dominant media. Find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all?
Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. This is Tuesday, and it is the 30th. Of November in the year 2004. And I'm glad you've joined us tonight. Been running in case you can't notice. I thought I was all set here tonight and then realized I wasn't. Let me begin here, folks, with our spiritual message. And let me repeat the date. Today is Tuesday, the 30th of November. In the year 2004. I didn't have my tape on. Our spiritual message this evening is the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. Father, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, let me sow light. And where there is sadness, joy. Dear Father, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born into eternal life. Isn't that beautiful? Well, I have a main thing that I want to share with you this evening, folks, and we're getting some clicks here, and it isn't coming from my equipment, I will tell you that. But first I want to mention, you probably all have heard on the news that Tom Ridge, the czar of Homeland Security, is going to be announcing his resignation.
Never forget, never.
time will come when it will change again. Never forget
folks, let's try this again. I guess we're having some phone problems at WFAR, so that was just a technical breakdown here. Before we were cut off, I was talking about the resignations from the Bush administration, and I'm looking at it with this situation that we've been talking about where the vote fraud has been so blatant and across the country that I would not be surprised to find out, none of us should be, sometime in December, maybe, that they'll tell us that we have a new president. And I was wondering if possibly these resignations are in preparation for a new regime under John Kerry. I don't know. That's just speculation. But something, they've announced the new Secretary of Commerce, and in his name is Alberto Gonzalez, I guess. And I have Tennesseans for Responsible Immigration Policies, and it says that the National Council of the RAZA confirms that Alberto Gonzalez is one of their members. Those of us in border states know the slogan of this group. The slogan is, for those within the race, everything. For those outside the race, nothing. The definition of the race, of course, is Hispanics, Latinos, Chicanos, or whatever their current name du jour. Should a white candidate be a member of the Ku Klux Klan or other white supremacist groups, the National Council of La Raza would scream in outrage. Seems they believe that racists are only white. So these are groups, folks, that are bound and determined to reoccupy the northwestern states that were wrested from Mexico back, I don't recall the dates when the Mexican War broke out, but if you recall when I was reading to you from that World Atlas, they literally used the word wrested, taken away from California and Texas and New Mexico. I don't know if Arizona is included in that or not. So now one of the cabinet heads, new cabinet heads, is a member. And there was something, tomorrow night, I am going to, please keep this in mind, what we're talking about now, because I don't want to do it all over, but tomorrow night, I am going to read to you from a convocation of the Illuminati here in Pennsylvania, where they talk about how the U.S. and Mexico once again be joined before the capstone is placed on the pyramid. I just wanted to mention this before we begin with my main thing tonight. And this I want to do because maybe I've done it before. If I have, It has been a couple of years ago, and this is relevant. We talk about what's going on in Iraq, and in our website, folks, if you haven't been there, the website is sweetliberty.org, and this is irritating because I just realized when we got cut off, I stopped my tape and I just now turned it back on. It's okay, but it would be nice, wouldn't it, to have another pair of hands here. Anyway, we have a section in the website titled Iraq, and there are a lot of relevant articles in there. One of them is a statement that says this war is for us. That was a Jew naturally making the statement. And we know that the hand leading, guiding, instructing, advising, setting policy in the U.S. government incorporated are what they call neocons. Actually, publicly, those people refer to themselves as Jews, but they found a really politically correct way to say Jews are ruling America today. And that, and this is why I want to share this with you tonight. It has to do with the first Iraqi war and the Zionist power behind it. And this is in our website, as I said, at sweetliberty.org in the Iraqi section. And it's titled The Zionist Campaign for War with Iraq in Revisionist Perspective. And I'll probably be taking tonight and tomorrow night to do this, now that we're 12 minutes into the broadcast already. And so I do not forget to do it at the end of the broadcast. Let me remind you that Jeff Bennett will be on Thursday night as guest host for Sweet Liberty. And let me remind you too, dear listeners, that Sweet Liberty is brought to you by you. And so I hope that you continue to come forth, and maybe we will be able to keep this broadcast on the air. If we do, it is because of those of you who come forth, who step forth and participate as listener sponsors of the broadcast. This is titled The Zionist Campaign for War with Iraq in Revisionist Perspective. And I have a short intro here that I did before the piece that's on the website. It says this piece is one of the first to be posted in this section and will remain at the top or near the top as new items are added. It truly does put this whole insane situation into perspective. As much as we think we know, when it's put together, as this has been, the pieces fall together. It takes the various facts we've learned and refiles them in our computer, our brain memory banks, in a decipherable chronological order. This was an eye-opener for me, since the catalyst to my awakening was the 1991 Gulf War. Very uninformed and naive at the time, I knew something was not right, and I couldn't figure out why we, the U.S., not us, were going to war over there. As ignorant as I was at the time, politically speaking, I knew it was not militarily sound to broadcast all the details of an intended, quote, invasion on network news television. There was General Shalikashvili with his pointer stick telling the world, as well as Saddam Hussein, all of the strategic details of where the troops would be placed, what weaponry would be used, and the exact day and time that the war would begin. Since then, I've voraciously read unvarnished history in the censored publications that are only available at the small and mostly unknown publishing companies. And by the way, folks, for those of you who have internet access, you can find a list of some of the books that I have recommended, that I have read and recommended, in our resources section at sweetliberty.org. And of course, those books are just the tip of the iceberg. What has become clear is that there hasn't been a war fought either on American soil or in foreign nations, including the 1991 Iraqi war and the current threat facing the Iraqi people. Now, this was February 9th, folks, 2003, before GW, the Shrub, declared the war. What has become clear is that there hasn't been a war fought either on American soil or in foreign nations, including the 1991 Iraqi war and the current threat facing the Iraqi people and U.S. soldiers, that wasn't planned and orchestrated. There's another section, how wars are made behind the scenes, and document some of the past wars and how they were made. And so I'm going to begin this, folks. Forgive me. Well, I don't have to ask you to forgive me for giggling, do I? One of our neighbors, a very lovely woman, she has a pet rescue and adoption kennels, and she's been forced to go out and get a job to be able to keep her home, and her little 10-year-old comes down here three nights a week while Denise is working, and she's lying in here on the floor by me on a pillow with my robe over her, and she's snoring so loudly. I can hear her even despite my... She's taking a nap while I'm doing the broadcast. And I wondered what the noise was, and I kept turning around trying to figure out where the noise was coming from, and Gigi's snoring. Okay, bless the little children, yes. They are so precious. Okay, let me do this now. The Zionist Campaign for War with Iraq in Revisionist Perspective, number one here, Political Zionism and the Persian Gulf War of 1991. One of the goals of historical revisionism is, by the way, this is by a gentleman called, named Paul Grubach, copyright 2003, it says. One of the goals of historical revisionism is to bring to the public's attention the part played by low-profile, shadowy forces in getting nations involved in wars. Only rarely will one ever see a discussion in the North American mainstream media of the role played by the Zionist interests in getting the U.S. involved in the Persian Gulf War of 1991. At the outset, it must be clearly seen that Jewish Zionists perceived Saddam Hussein's Iraq as one of Israel's most dangerous enemies. Hence, wouldn't it be nice, so this Zionist logic went, to goad America into utilizing all of its military might to destroy one of Israel's worst enemies. Simply put, many Jewish Zionists have long relished the thought of America being Israel's, doing Israel's dirty work. This was revealed in an article that appeared in Cleveland, Ohio's main Jewish community paper, the Cleveland Jewish News, and this is quoting from the paper. Some normally outspoken Jewish activists are deliberately muting their most fervent wish that the Bush administration deal with the Iraqi military threat in a decisive way out of fear of an anti-Semitic backlash that could be a byproduct of a costly and protracted Persian Gulf War. The Plain Dealer, Cleveland, Ohio, pointed out that Israel's contemporaneous prime minister, Yitzhak Shamir, actively encouraged the U.S.-led alliance to continue the war effort until Iraq's military machine was destroyed and Saddam was removed from power. The article added, quote, in pursuing the Israeli interests, Israeli officials have sometimes played down the difficulties Allied forces faced in fighting Iraq. I wonder if you remember, folks, from the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Here it is. This is in protocol number 7. I want to remind you of this. It says, in a word, to sum up our system of keeping the governments of the Goyim in check, we shall show our strength to one of them by terrorist attempts, and to all, if we allow the possibility of a general rising against us, we shall respond with the guns of America or China or Japan. Well, the response, actually it isn't response, is it? It is totally offensive. And this is why they believed that Iraq was their enemy, they're a great threat, because Saddam Hussein was very, very clear on the danger that Israel is to the Middle East. And if you have any doubts about that, go into our Iraq section at sweetliberty.org and read the book towards the bottom of that section titled Saddam Hussein. And you will understand why they wanted Saddam Hussein taken out. Back to the article. The American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, APAC, is one of the most powerful of all political lobbying organizations in the U.S. In a rare but quite candid Wall Street Journal article, it was pointed out that APAC's efforts were crucial in gaining congressional approval for President... I'm sorry. Let me start that again. In a Wall Street Journal article, it was pointed out that APAC's efforts were crucial in getting congressional approval for President George Bush's war plans, George Herbert Walker Bush. But even more importantly, the article revealed this immensely powerful Zionist organization worked behind the scenes and consciously disguised its efforts to garner congressional approval for the war. There are a lot of footnotes here, folks, that this is a very well footnoted article. Cleveland Jewish News stated, and see, remember, they're talking about the first Gulf War here. Most Jewish groups lined up behind the Conference of Presidents of major Jewish organizations to support, that's an organization in itself, the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations, to support publicly the president's policy. How hard they actually worked is unclear. Many senators and representatives reported getting calls from Jewish leaders and constituents. The effort was kept low profile, largely out of sensitivity to possible accusations of turning the pro-war resolution into an Israel vote. So that's voting. Remember, this was from the Cleveland Jewish News. In politics, when a concerted effort is kept low profile, it means that an attempt is being made to hide the effort from public scrutiny. These pro-war efforts were kept low profile in order to hide from public scrutiny how certain Jewish Zionists were pushing for a Gulf War. This intense desire on the part of certain Jews to get the U.S. to destroy Iraq's military capability helps to explain why liberal, anti-war Jewish individuals and organizations suddenly switched into hardline pro-war hawks. Hold on just a sec, folks. I'm sorry about that. Gigi's mom came to get her, and the door is locked, and I had to get Gigi awake. All right. This intense desire on the part of certain Jews to get the U.S. to destroy Iraq's military capability helps to explain why liberal anti-war Jewish individuals and organizations suddenly switched into hardline pro-war hawks. The Jewish congressman, Representative Gary Ackerman, a Democrat from New York, typifies this element. He had a history of anti-war activism. He opposed the war in Vietnam and the military operation in Grenada. He has described himself as a peacemonger, and yet, when it came to war against Israel's enemy, Iraq, he voted in favor of President Bush's war plans and called for firm resolve against Iraqi aggression. Michael Collins Piper, former columnist for the now-defunct Spotlight, made this observation. Quote, he said, when an engineered congressional approval of the resolution that backed President George Bush's drive for war against Iraqi strongman Saddam Hussein, who engineered congressional approval of the resolution that backed President George Bush's drive for war against Iraqi strongman Saddam Hussein? None other than Representative Stephen Solars, Democrat of New York, the Israel lobby's chief legislative tactician on Capitol Hill. End quoting Michael Collins Piper. Yes, indeed, it was ardent Jewish Zionist Stephen Solars, liberal critic of the Vietnam War and U.S. military action abroad, who helped form a pro-war pressure group, the Committee for Peace and Security in the Gulf. Don't you love it? A pro-war pressure group labeled the Committee for Peace and Security, Peace for the New World Order, Security for Israel, folks. The Zionist interests had a decisive impact upon his pro-war behavior. Was revealed by a comment that he himself made January 17, 91 at Georgetown University, one day after the U.S. airstrikes against Iraqi targets began. And this was, once again, Stephen Solars. And he said at Georgetown University, January 17, 91, he said, enough Jews have been gassed in our century. For that reason alone, our military strike last night was justified. Remember, they began the first Gulf War January 16th, folks, and the statement was made the following day. There have been enough Jews gassed in our century. For that reason alone, our military strike last night was justified. And we're taking a 60-second break here, and I hope that you will have your pen and your paper in hand. And I hope you will take my address down, folks, and I will be back with you just in a moment. Stay with us.
FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dark,
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
Five is bleeding in.
Thank you. Oh, 5085.
And nine, more than a dozen times I've heard Brother Stare with a program in the background where I can't hear.
You mean you're telling me that Brother Stare is walking on us again, Dennis?
I'm not saying he is. I've heard him have the same problem about a dozen times.
Oh, you've heard that he has the same problem.
Yeah. I mean, this is a universal problem with sensitive information. The regular garbage just goes out almost like FM.
And when did you say it started being jammed?
Either 921 or 922,
okay.
And from the background, it sounds like it's still jammed.
Okay. Thanks, Dennis.
See you later.
Bye. Folks, I hope you can hear me. That was Dennis calling from Illinois, and he said that about 20 after, just when I started talking about this, quote, sensitive subject, where he lives anyway, the reception is getting jammed. That's amazing. Well, let us continue, and let us hope that there are a lot of you that can hear this. We'll begin here where I left off, with the comment that Solars made the day after the first airstrikes on January 16, 1991. On January 17th at Georgetown University, he said, enough Jews have been gassed in our century. For that reason alone, our military strike last night was justified. So, you see, they're using the guns, but not the guns that are important. It is the bodies that are being used, U.S. soldiers killing and dying in defense of the world order, ladies and gentlemen. And in that article where that was quoted in Foreign Affairs, Arthur Schlesinger Jr. also said that we will not have a new world order without paying for it in blood, as well as in words and money, and it is always the blood of the non-Jews for the most part, isn't it? Enough Jews have been gassed in our century for that reason. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you quickly, you're coming in very well.
Oh, thank you,
Gloria. Here in New York, okay? It's a great show. Thanks.
Thank you, honey. Oh, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. Maybe there's local jamming that goes on. Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Fritz.
This is Fritz from Old Town.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering what happened to the men in this society. Because we've seen everything holy and as sacred, the American people have been degraded and defiled. No matter what we look at art, religion, especially the sanctity of marriage.
Yes.
There was a time when men would take care of their children and their wives and be loyal to them.
There was a time when women acted like women too, Fritz.
And now I'm wondering, all these neoconservative heroes on the mass media have been shown to have feet of clay. And by that I mean that Rush, I call him Rush Lame Goy, there has been married three times. He's been divorced three times, and now he's going out with a Jewish girl from New York City.
He's probably Jewish.
You also look at the other one there. What's his name? O'Reilly. Well, it turns out that he is himself is some kind of pervert.
Mm-hmm.
They're quite willing to show for Israel and the Zionist lobby in the United States.
It's where what do you expect when they're on the Zionist-controlled media networks, babe? What do you expect, Fritz?
When you turn over
you don't
the
expect,
rock...
Yeah, you don't expect to hear Sweet Liberty on one of those, do you?
No.
And as a matter of fact, I have mentioned that from WFAR, there are two or three AM stations picking up their broadcasters.
Yes.
And I couldn't... it was hard for me to believe that an AM station would carry Sweet Liberty because we don't pull punches here. And when I spoke with Nicholas not long ago, he said that they had replaced my program with another one, not, you know, that eight particular AM station.
Yes,
so,
but anyone kosher conservative, I want the American people to know that they're utterly reprobate and corrupt individuals, and that goes from the bottom up to the very top, up to George Bush, who was appointed a member of a RASA to be the head of the Justice Department and ensure the relationship of justice between American citizens.
I thought it was the Commerce Department.
Commerce Department is even worse.
Yeah, the borders.
Carlos Gutierrez, a Cuban-American.
Oh, is that the commerce, the new commerce guy?
Yes, who made his bones in Mexico City by peddling cereal for Kellogg Company, is now the Secretary of Commerce.
Thank you for correcting me on that. Say his name again.
Carlos Gutierrez.
Gutierrez. He's
American.
He's a Mexican-born American or Cuban-born American.
Worked in Mexico City.
He was a Mexican-born, dear, because I was listening to NPR News, and that's what they said.
Well, that may be another deception. It's all a prelude to measuring... or rather merging the two countries into one country.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
it's this guy, this Albert, the guy that is taking over the Commerce Department. Maybe he's the Mexican-born American.
Yes.
Yeah.
Year.
Okay, would you like to hear the rest of this, Fritz?
Certainly.
Thank you. Thanks for your call, dear.
Yes.
And it's coming in okay, huh?
Bye.
Good, bye.
Good.
Okay, well, I'm glad Fritz called to correct that, folks. So that actually makes five. And I forgot about Ashcroft stepping down. Doesn't it make you wonder if they're stepping down and making way for the new appointees under a, new president, not George Bush, but maybe John Kerry? We'll see, won't we, folks? Okay, let's get back to this. At the 85th annual dinner of the American Jewish Committee, he again admitted that the overwhelming thought of the 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust was the ideological driving force behind his pro-war activism. I wanted to go back up. The Stephen Solars is the one who's made these comments. He's a U.S. Senator from New York, folks, or excuse me, U.S. Congressman from New York, making these comments. The overwhelming thought of the 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust was the ideological driving force behind his pro-war activism. As the Jewish critic of political Zionism, Dr. Alfred Lilienthal, has pointed out, this is a stock-in-trade Zionist tactic. Using the Holocaust doctrine to justify military action against Israel's enemies. Certain sources have noted that the Jewish vote in Congress, giving President Bush the authority to make war, was split. About half of the Jewish legislators voted for it, and about half of them against it, and they then drew the erroneous conclusion that this in itself proves, this is quoting, proves that the interests of Israel had nothing to do with the Congressional War Resolution. According to this line of reasoning, each Jewish member of the Congress was, quote, voting his conscience for what is best for the U.S. These sources failed to take into account the complexity of the situation. There were, in fact, two conflicting forces operating upon these pro-Zionist Jewish legislators. Their Jewish identification with Israel was goading them to vote in favor of the war resolution. However, there was another opposing force at work here. During the late 1980s and 1990s, there was a consistent mounting criticism of the pervasive Zionist influence upon Congress and society in general. Indeed, political commentators like Patrick Buchanan were bold enough to publicly criticize Israel and, quote, its Amen Corner in the U.S., who were beating the drums for war. These Jewish legislators were well aware of this criticism and were also aware of the possibly fatal political consequences if all Jewish legislators voted in a block in favor of Bush's war plans. The public's attention may very well have focused upon the inordinate influence that alien Zionist interests have over Congress. The Jewish legislators who voted against Bush's war plans may have said to themselves, if all of the Jews in Congress vote in favor of Bush's war plans, and ultimately this Gulf War turns into a disaster, the political backlash could be fatal. It could mean an end to our political careers and Zionist influence upon Congress. Therefore, I think it is in my own and Israel's best interests if a good portion of we Jewish legislators vote against Bush's war plans. And yet, this is, and quoting what he said, they may have said to themselves, and the author goes on. He says, and yet there may even be a better explanation as to why the Jewish vote in Congress was split. It may have been planned that way. As the now defunct Spotlight noted, legislative votes are frequently well planned in advance by both Republican and the Democrats. This permits legislators with public relations problems to cast politically correct votes while at the same time being assured the outcome of the balloting will be exactly as expected. The Wall Street Journal noted that there was quiet relief among Jewish groups when it became known that, quote, the vote showed no solid Jewish bloc in favor of a war so relevant to Israel. One Jewish lawmaker commented that it wasn't such a bad idea that the Jewish vote in Congress was split. By consciously splitting the Jewish vote, two objectives could be obtained. Not only could the war resolution get passed, but just as importantly, public opinion would remain largely unaware of the linkage between the pro-war resolution, the interests of Israel, and Zionist influence upon Congress. With a split in the Jewish vote in Congress, Zionist politicos could surreptitiously discredit the claims of the critics that Zionist interests wield too much influence upon Congress. In this case, American Zionists faced a severe dilemma. On the one hand, they had to somehow satisfy their most fervent wish of getting America to destroy Iraq's military might. Yet, on the other hand, if the American people ever became aware of the fact that an alien Zionist element was working to have American soldiers sent to die for the state of Israel, the result could be politically fatal. This is why many Jewish efforts to get America involved in the Persian Gulf War of 91 were kept low profile. This is why AIPAC disguised its crucial role in gaining congressional approval for the war. This is why much of the pro-war propaganda issuing forth from many Jewish sources was couched in the rhetoric of patriotism and the American national interest. Patriotism, that's when they first hung the yellow ribbons around the old oak trees, wasn't it, folks? According to many of these Jewish sources, Saddam Hussein was the new Hitler bent on destroying America. Hence, as the propaganda went, fighting Iraq was in the best interests of the U.S. right. Behind this, quote, patriotic propaganda and rhetoric lurked so many Zionist interests. As admitted in Cleveland Jewish News, it would have been severely threatening to Zionist interests if large numbers of Americans started asking the question, should Americans die for the interests of Israel? Historically speaking, this clandestine method of promoting Jewish interests has been a standard stock and trade tactic of many Jews. For example, in 1936, Hollywood Jewish writers and executives had a meeting where they formulated plans for dealing with Nazi Germany. The Jewish producer, David Selznick, now that was 1936, folks, and I want to remind you that right after Adolf Hitler came into power in Germany under National Socialism, that was a party. It was not Nazism. It was the National Socialist Party. And right after he came into power, because he had kicked the banksters out of Germany, and because he had kicked the Zionist Jews out of high offices and out of the education arena, and he closed the theaters, and he burned the pornography that the young children at that time were being bombarded by, that is why Adolf Hitler and Germany had to be destroyed. Remember that. And when you read the book, Saddam Hussein, you will see that I, in my opinion, this is obviously just an opinion, but based on what I have learned to this point, I see that it would be appropriate to compare Saddam Hussein with Adolf Hitler for the good that Saddam Hussein was attempting to do for the people in Iraq, and also for the good that he was trying to do for the Middle East countries, period, because he was attempting to get a pan-Arab coalition together, and he had made statements about the dangers that Israel was to the Middle East and to real peace. Let me get back to this. So anyway, in 1936, Hollywood Jewish writers and executives had a meeting where they formulated plans for dealing with Nazi Germany. Excuse me. The Jewish producer, David Selznick, along with attorney Martin Gang, were present. Gang recalled how Selznick wanted to deal collectively with the Hitler regime. And this is a quote. What stands out in my mind, this is quoting Gang, what stands out in my mind was David Selznick, who wanted to do it in the usual Jewish way of being on the fringes and not letting yourself appear as involved in it. Don't get too public. Do it quietly, behind the scenes. That's end quoting. That's what Selznick wanted to do in 1936. Sometime after the end of the Persian Gulf War, the former Prime Minister of Canada, Brian Mulroney, admitted his country's reason for joining the war effort was to protect the state of Israel. To protect the state of Israel. In all fairness, there were some elements within the Jewish community that were very much against American involvement in the Persian War of 1991, Persian Gulf. And I would be quick to point out that Jewish elements were not the only ones pushing for war. There were very powerful WASP and Arab elements behind this push for U.S. involvement in the war. But these admissions in no way nullified the historical fact that Jewish Zionist elements were an integral part of a coalition of forces that drove America into the first Persian Gulf War. and this is a section 2, Political Zionism and the Probable U.S. Attack Upon Iraq in 2003. It is now January 2003, and the United States is once again on the brink of war with Saddam Hussein's Iraq. As we shall soon see, once again, it is the Jewish Zionist power elite and their Gentile allies that are a major driving force behind this push for war with Iraq. Although the evidence in support of this claim is abundant, it is rarely discussed in mainstream U.S. media, a tribute to the enormous power of the Jewish Zionist power elite and their ability to censor the news. In fact, political pundits that work for Jewish-owned pro-Zionist newspapers attempt to mislead the people by prodding them to believe that the Jewish Zionist power elite is not a driving force behind U.S. war plans against Iraq. In regard to the probable U.S. attack against Iraq, the Jewish Zionist power elite has appeared to have changed their tactics. It makes no sense at all for them to deny that a U.S. attack upon Iraq would serve Israel Zionist interests. Hello, you're on the air. Hello. Probably a wrong number, folks. That probably shocks somebody when they call a wrong number and then hear somebody say, "Hello, you're on the air." All right, let me get back to this. I will finish this tomorrow night, by the way. In regard to the probable U.S. attack against Iraq, the Jewish Zionist power elite has appeared to have changed their tactics. It makes no sense at all for them to deny that a U.S. attack upon Iraq in 2003 would serve Israeli Zionist interests. It would be both pathetic. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, Jackie. This is Fritz.
Yes, Fritz.
There is no state of Israel. Have you ever heard the phrase, the state of France?
No, no.
State of Cuba, the state of Japan. This is how much they influence our thinking.
But think about this, Fritz.
Another term.
Yeah, but think about this. The United Nations refers to all countries as states.
Oh, all right.
Nation states.
Yes, but when have you ever heard in the media, you heard that term, state of, applied to another country? The only one to use it. State of Israel.
I know, isn't it?
Make you think that...
Well, maybe it's a 51st state.
Well, that's what they use that term, so you will associate that. You'll be very friendly. So we have to think of another term, like...
artificial.
Creation of the synagogue of Satan.
Or how about the artificial?
The artificial state.
Yeah.
Or the future home of the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, honey. Bye. It would be, I'm back at this article, it would be both pathetic and pointless for Zionist representatives to spend time trying to disprove the claims that Israel would not benefit from a U.S. attack upon Iraq. Well, they said it, didn't they, folks? Both Bush and both Kerry said that the war on Iraq was very important for Israel. Remember that? I read those quotes to you a couple of times. I'll try to dig them up. And you can hear them again tomorrow night in relation to this war, never-ending war. No matter what the outcome of a U.S. attack upon Iraq, Israel is the nation that has the most to gain from the ouster of Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. Indeed, this was pointed out by panelists at a Bar-Ilan, it looks like, University of Israel. It was a seminar entitled The Regional Implications of a U.S. Attack on Iraq. Yes, Zionists admit a U.S. attack upon Iraq would serve Israeli Zionist interests, but it would also serve the interests of everyone else, so we're told. This is why So their tune goes, it is not Zionist forces that are pushing for a U.S. attack upon Iraq, but rather concerned patriots who realize what a danger to world peace that Saddam Hussein really is. If we remember that their definition, folks, of the word peace is a total and absence of any resistance to their world order, keep that in mind when they talk about world peace, okay? It's their definition of peace. Every Jew a king and every Gentile a slave. It is important to note that the Bush administration and its Zionist allies attempt to make people believe that somehow going to war with Hussein's Iraq is in the best interest of everyone. As the psychologist Kevin McDonald has pointed out, this is an age-old Jewish tactic making sectarian Jewish interests appear to be congruent with the interests of the Gentile world. Let me do that again. As the psychologist Kevin McDonald has pointed out, this is an age-old Jewish tactic making sectarian Jewish interests appear to be congruent with the interests of the Gentile world. Now, we're over halfway through with this, folks, and I'll be able to finish it for you tomorrow night. And so our time is up this evening. I hope that you will put your pen in your hand and that you will write my address down if you haven't, because I am reminding you once again that Sweet Liberty is brought to you by you, our listeners. And I hope that those of you who have not yet come forth, if you're listening, if you appreciate it, come and join us. Participate. Thank you for being here. And we will be back with you tomorrow night. We will finish this. Thank you, folks. God bless you. And good night.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily